The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everyone? You are on the Sharks Audio Network, The Buildup, and we are getting ready for tonight's game against Nashville. It is a 7 o'clock start time, 6:30 pregame right here on the Sharks Audio Network. A big game as San Jose looks for a fifth straight win. We wake up this morning with the Sharks occupying the second wild card spot. Right now, though, we're going to bring in my good friend of the Sharks Audio Network, the one and only Brody Brazil, to talk about everything that's going on. Brody, what's happening, man? How are you doing?
We're recording with no video attached, Ted, so I do feel weird that I can only hear you and not see you. We've never talked like this before. We always talk face-to-face or screen-to-screen, so we'll try and fight through this.
It's because it's a mad, mad day for me, and I'm still hoodie up portion of the morning. It's 9:35 at the time we're recording this.
I haven't showered.
I haven't showered either. I have a Quakes game today as well, so it's a very busy day. It's a little bit of a madness moment right now for me, but it's all part of the fun, Brody. But here's... You're the perfect person to talk to about this because I was trying to think. I've often made lazy comparisons to the Warriors and their early run with the Sharks team and then the Giants around the same 08-09 when they started showing a lot of their young studs. But I recently had another one come into my head and I wanted your take on it. I want to go back to the end of June, early July 2012, the Oakland Athletics, when they started making their unexpected turn in that season. I remember Young had a walk-off home run. Cespedes was suddenly turning into a star in the league, and no one really had great expectations for that team. And then suddenly they had a great run into the first round of the playoffs, and they lost in Game 5 against Justin Verlander and the Tigers. And I was there as a fan that day, not media, but I remember the unexpected "Let's go Oakland" chant broke out at the end. Just a great emotional sports fan experience. But I just wanted your take on, you know, the comparison to that team, because no expectation beyond, yeah, Cespedes could be a stud, and then it turned into something really special.
You know, I think there's so many similarities, Ted. Let me try and re-remember all that stuff, because I conveniently wiped it from my memory, that baseball franchise.
No kidding.
The similarity between the 2012 A's and what we're witnessing right now with the Sharks is kind of the magical aspect. And obviously the last three or four games. Now, they didn't need a late regulation goal to beat the Leafs the other night, you know, but the three prior games and the St. Louis game at home included, you know, you kind of get that feel of, you know, only special teams win special games in these special situations. And, you know, for the Sharks, having their Achilles heel be, you know, last year is third periods, can't close out teams, can't win the one goal games. Man, this year they've really done more than split the difference on those close situations. They've won a lot more than they've lost, including that stretch a while back of, what, 9 straight overtime wins in a row. Mm-hmm. So the similarity is, you know, the Oakland A's of that 2012 magical season where nobody expected it to happen, and it happened for them, and they won the West. The similarity is the magical element at the end. The difference is we look at the Sharks and we're thinking, okay, this team, we could tell this team's going to be good. It's only a matter of when. Back then, when you looked at that baseball team, it was like, who's playing third base now?
Right.
Brandon Inge is going to do what for us? So I think the point is the Sharks' trajectory after this is a little bit more clear-cut. Their expectations are a little bit more clear-cut. You know, the superstardom of one player alone and Macklin and how he's emerged, obviously, this year are a little bit different. That team didn't necessarily have it had star players, but not superstar players. So you're right. I mean, it's a great comparison. I love other people, you know, still talking about the Warriors trajectory, too. And I don't think that's a lazy narrative, Ted. I honestly, you know, when you get some high draft picks and you do it sequentially in a couple years and you're finding yourself with a Steph Curry and a Klay Thompson and a Draymond Green, just a couple years apart. Now, I also think we're at the phase, you remember the big, what was that, summer of 16, I want to say, when the Warriors went out and signed Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
You know, not to get too far ahead of this season, because I can't wait to see how the story ends here, you know, or the chapters conclude, wherever they do. But I think at some point, maybe this summer or beyond, we feel safe enough with this team and this roster to say, okay, now we know we can add from the outside. We can get a big free agent signing here, and I don't know if it's up front or on the blue line, but you feel like last summer, I put myself in Mike Greer's shoes, yeah, I kind of know where this is going. I don't know when it's going, and I don't know exactly the pace and the speed. Now, since you've got a better grasp, I think the commitment could be there. It could be an easier commitment this summer. So that's what I'm looking forward to, even beyond, the conclusion of 82 games here.
I think the hardest part of the free agent aspect or trade aspect of adding talent is that you already see such an emotional attachment from fans towards players. I mean, people were up in arms last year when Fabian Zetterlin got traded at the deadline because he was a fan favorite, and obviously it's worked out well for San Jose. But I think there is this mindset, and I get into it myself, of where, oh, well, they can't move this player, and I'm constantly reminding myself, like, well, Mike Greer actually doesn't. He's very good at taking the emotional aspect out of it and saying, well, what can we do to improve the team, even if the fan base loves this player, because fans love wins even more.
Are you suggesting the Sharks be more like the Golden Knights and do some of these savage moves? You're like, wait, are you like, even Bruce Cassidy getting replaced? Like,
right.
I'm sorry, a team in a high playoff position, like one of the top spots in the Pacific Division, and you're changing your coach with, what was it, 12 or 13 games to play at that point? I think you're right. You get attached to this group, and they have been a special group. And it's not even just the Macklins and Wills, and obviously Misa has emerged, and Sam Dickinson's played an entire season. But the Ostapchuks, the Gaudets, Alex Nedeljkovic, when he came in this year, it was a nice compliment piece to Askarov. Well, Alex Nedeljkovic signed a contract extension this year, and he's proven like how ingrained he's become for this team on the nights that he starts. So, I agree with you. I feel like, and that's the thing about this season, hypothetically, let's go worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. Sharks don't make the playoffs after 82 games. I think the level of disappointment is going to be, dang, the season's over. I really like this group. It's never a duplicate group from one season to the next. It just never works out that way. I had an emotional attachment to this group. I hate to see them get broken up entirely, or even anybody get broken up. But I do think that we will always look back fondly on this season, this group, as kind of where the story started. And I don't mean to discount last year, like, hey, rookie seasons for Mac and Will, pretty cool, whatever. But I feel like this is the year where you and I, old Ted and old Brazil, are going to look back and say, you know what, Ted, it was the 25-26 season where we started off. Like, I feel like this is going to be... This is going to be a milestone, a mile marker for where this thing goes.
Most definitely. And, with this current four-game win streak, they're trying to get past four in a row for the first time since the 2018-2019 season. They've had four wins in a row a couple times, but now their chance to get five is coming up in a huge game against the Nashville team, which is tied with points with San Jose. They have one game more than San Jose, so San Jose has a game in hand. But the Sharks have a 534 points percentage, Nashville at 527. The last time they played Nashville, they fell behind, what was it, 5-1 at the end of the first period, I believe.
Yeah.
They
spotted them the first two right out of the gate. I mean, it was an uphill battle from literally from puck drop. Yeah.
It was not their best effort, but that's what's interesting. There's a storyteller's rhyme in that their attempt to win a fifth in the row for the first time since they last made the playoffs is coming up against a team that is right behind them in the standings and is a team that also, I think we can honestly say, embarrassed them about 10 days ago.
I'm looking at the standings here. They're right in front of me. So I've got, I'm going to throw out some numbers here and some different ways to look at this. It's interesting to me, as we also look at regulation wins that some teams have versus like the Kings have 19 overtime losses.
Yeah.
So they're getting so many of their points, one at a time instead of the twos. Like, the Sharks have 36 wins. The Kings have 30 wins, and both teams have 79 points.
I know.
Here's another one. Goal differential has stood out to me. And obviously the Ducks have flirted with the top spot in the division. Right now Edmonton is holding it as you and I are talking here. But the Ducks have a negative 12 goal differential. Edmonton has a plus 12 goal differential. The Utah Mammoth with the top wildcard spot right now, a plus 27. And I don't mean to put us in a negative light, but the Sharks at a minus 33.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how some of these teams have been doing it, how the Mammoth, you know, have 84 points to the Sharks 79. Again, the goal differential might speak that story, but also the Ducks are at 87, three more than the Mammoth. And we're talking about a 36-goal differential swing here between where the Ducks are at and where the Mammoth are at. So I think my point in giving you all that info too quickly, it doesn't – not everything here makes sense when you look at the standings and who's where and really how they got here. I think as we're going down the final stretch of two-plus weeks here at the end of the season, kind of none of it really matters how you got to right here right now. Mm-hmm. It only matters what happens in these final eight games for the Sharks.
And it's setting up to be pretty darn interesting here as we tonight have Nashville. And then it's going to be, an incredible matchup against Connor Bedard on Monday night. Then Edmonton's back in town. That's another team that the Sharks didn't have a great performance with when it was then the biggest game of the year. Then they go down to Anaheim to take on the Ducks and one last home game against Vancouver. Then it's three on the road with a third consecutive Wednesday, Thursday back-to-back. To finish it off. I mean, I really do think, Brody, it's going to come down to the last game of the season, and I think the Sharks hopefully would be in the role of controlling their destiny and only needing to win to get in. But, you know, I keep on going back to the start of the year of where were no expectations, and I still think expectation is a relative term right now. But even being in this situation on the 4th of April playing a big game with playoff implications – this is a best case scenario. Like, yeah, maybe they won a game against, you know, Calgary or St. Louis a couple weeks ago and they'd have some breathing room. But you know what? It's like, to your point, it doesn't matter how they got here. They're here.
I think, and again, let me always play the pessimistic card so that if I'm wrong, then we're all happy, right? Like, we made the playoffs. If it comes down to it at the end of the season and the Sharks don't qualify for the postseason, we will look back at two things. Two six-game losing streaks. And we say, if one of those were split in half and you picked up three wins or even, you know, two wins out of the six in either one or both, and I agree, I do think it's going to come down to the final couple games. I would say, you know, by game 79 or maybe 80, I think we'll have a really good idea of exactly how this is because right now we don't know. And also the games in hand element.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's crazy. The top three teams in the division have played 76, 76, and 76. Then the Mammoth have played 75 in a top wildcard spot. Then there's the Sharks in the second wildcard spot. But outside the playoffs looking in, 75, 75, 75. So the Sharks are always going to have that one opportunity to pick up those two more points. And I don't think the Sharks catch up in terms of games played until the very end of the season within the final two or three games for everybody else. So it's going to come down, I think, to either logistically or mathematically knowing in or out until the very end. But I agree with you. I think it's so easy to focus on, you know, because you're that close and it's a tangible goal and the players want it and everybody wants it. And look, we you and I as employees of the team want it for the franchise and the organization, and it would be a nice thing to think about over the summer. But I also think, you know, even again, worst case scenario, you get to look at this summer, you get to look back and say, okay, if we really were a two-year plan to get in, and we're that close, and we know what cost us, and we know who we can be. What's the alternative? Hypothetically, playing Colorado in a first round, and I don't know how that goes. I think you could shock Colorado, but I also think it could very much be decided in their favor, too. I just don't know. I think no matter what, the point is no matter what, whenever the final Sharks game has been played this season, there's going to be a lot of satisfaction. And I think a lot of understanding of the timeline and that it's firmed up. And again, a piece this offseason, maybe even on the blue line or up front, depth scoring, I think, is super important. You don't really want to have Macklin's as part of, 51% of your points? I mean, do you know that stat? It keeps changing, by the way. But it's basically been about, half the goals the Sharks scored this year?
Yeah.
So I love it, but I would like to diversify that a little bit more for next year.
You bring up Macklin at the moment I wanted to switch to him. And you and I, Brody, we have been around since the early 80s. I'm an 82 baby. I think you're an 82 or 81. We're right there next to each other.
Yep,
we
81. Yep.
Probably don't have as great of a memory of Joe Montana early on as we should. But otherwise, we got to see primetime Rice. We got to see Steve Young. We got to see Tim Lincecum, Barry Bonds, Jason Giambi, Ricky Henderson, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, all these players up close. But the intensity and alacrity with which Macklin Celebrini has thrust himself as to being one of the best players in the league and all of North American sports. I mean, Tim Lincecum is the only direct comparison there in terms of the meteoric rise. But something about Macklin, I mean, watching him do what he did against the Ducks the other night, I'm just shaking my head, man, because I do expect it at this point. And I'm shocked in the sense that he does exactly what I expect him to do, to tie up the game when it's 6-on-5 and then assist the game winner. And he is at such an incredible pace at such an incredibly young age. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it. In the Bay Area, we've been spoiled with superstars. So it seems hyperbolic to say this, but I feel it's the accurate statement, and I feel like you're probably right there with me.
You know, the other night when there was about 6 or 7 minutes left in the game, Sharks down by one. This was in the St. Louis game. And, you know, trying to tie up the game, and you're thinking, how many more shifts does Macklin have with this much time on the clock? And it's crazy. We're like, you know, come save us. But no, I mean, he gives you the best opportunity in those late game situations. It's crazy from that game to the Toronto win the other night, where he was held pointless. And here's the other stat: the Sharks have precisely 2 wins all year in games of the, I don't know, 16 or 17 games where he doesn't record a point,
right?
15 games, something like that. It's in the teens. The Sharks have 2 wins in the games he doesn't register a point. It's crazy because on the 4-point night, I'm thrilled for him. And I do hope he catches Joe Thornton's Sharks single season points record. Like, it's crazy that, I mean, that should be the sentence alone, because if we're basing Sharks superstardom and contribution and, you know, who's like the name in hockey in this area, I think it's Jumbo. And no disrespect to Patty, but I mean, Jumbo put up some ridiculous numbers, and Patty did too. But I think, you know, Jumbo's points total stands alone. If Macklin can get there, great. But I think it's also, you look at a game like Toronto and you say, wow, everybody else stepped up. And it was a game and a win where you didn't need Macklin and you still scored a bunch of goals, 3 plus the empty netter. So I think what I'm saying is it goes both ways. You want to lean on him. You want to know that he's your guy. You want to know that he's your backbone. But at some point, you need to make sure that he can't be isolated so much, or you can't put all your eggs in that one basket where if he is going through a rut, and kind of like when, you know, the Sharks recently lost those 6 in a row, and he was pointless for a lot of them and goalless for a lot of them. You don't have to worry. You don't have to put all the pressure on him, you know? And I think but that's the evolution of this team, right?
Right.
It's not always going to be that way. It may feel like that right now, but yeah. And he's in the sentence for me already. He's there. I'm trying to delay the inevitable of putting him in the conversation of those other names, just because it's in the same reason why he doesn't have a C on his sweater yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we all know where this is going, but we just want to take our time with it. It's like, I suppose it's been a while since I started a relationship, being, you know, married for 10 plus and having.
Have you not changed your Facebook status? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm just saying, I don't remember how these initial phases go, but you want to take it slow. Like, you know, this is a long-term thing. You want to enjoy the courting of it. You want to enjoy the initial aspects of it. And so that, I guess maybe that's what I'm trying to do with him.
We'll leave it at that, Brody. Thank you for your time as always. And I will see you soon. All right, my friend.
My pleasure. If I can keep up with all these games, wow, it's great. It's busy. I just can't wait. I can't wait to see how this book ends. Like, we're getting to the good part here. How's it going to leave us? That's what I want to know.
Again, that is our good friend Brody Brazil joining us here on the Sharks Audio Network as we get ready for tonight's game against Nashville. Again, 7 o'clock go time, 6:30 pregame, right here on the Sharks Audio Network. And then we're back at it Monday night at 7 against Chicago. Wednesday at 7 against the Oilers. Then you've got the game on the 9th, the second of a back-to-back at Anaheim. You're back home on the 11th for the final home game of the year against Vancouver. And then it's going to be at Nashville on Monday, at Chicago on Wednesday, and then at Winnipeg on the 16th, the Wednesday, for the San Jose Sharks to finish off their season. So this story has... what? We've got 8 more games left to figure out where this is all going to go, including tonight's game. It's been a fun ride up to this point, guys, but we all want to know how this ends. We are getting to the good part, like Brody was saying. This is an incredible story, and we all want to know how this ends up going with the rest of the year. But it's been magic up to this point. It really has, and now we're getting into the the crunch time, the best part of the season. So be sure to tune in at 6:30 tonight, 7 o'clock go time, as the San Jose Sharks play host to the Nashville Predators. And then I'll be with you tomorrow morning on Morning Tide to look back at the game and ahead to the game against Chicago. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.